This is Cultivating Indigenous Voices from KXEI Tucson, hosted and produced by Tina Andrew. Today I'm in the studio with Lourdes, who is here to talk about the work that she does with Indigenous Alliance Without Borders. And I'm glad that you're here with me to share your story.
Niosinchimanyavo inepo ne Lourdes Escalante Teak ne Uyuli Titeak. Hello. Many blessings to you all. My name is Lourdes Escalante. I also go by Uyuli. I grew up in South Tucson in the community called Barrio Libre. And the Barrio Libre is a Yaqui community, and it's connected to our traditional Teopo, which is a church, our ceremonial church. So that was community to us. But, you know, I went to Mission View, went to Wakefield Middle School, and then I went to Rincon High School, which is on the far east side of town. My dad was a huge support system in making sure that I wasn't getting into trouble, because you hear, oh, I grew up in South Tucson, that means you're a troublemaker kind of thing, or, oh, you were part of the gangs, or, you know, there's a certain stereotype that comes out of belonging to South Tucson. Whereas with me, I was a bit of a nerd growing up. You know, and I did proudly wear it as a kid. And that's why I really wanted to go to University High School, which is where Rincon High School is. Like, they share the same site. So, like, in high school, like, I made sure I took the bus. I took the SunTran every morning to go to Rincon. And for me, it was a bit of a culture shock going to that school. But at the same time, like, I have this tendency to put myself in very uncomfortable situations for the sake of my growth. It's not like me taking this space to represent. It's me just like, I know I'm going to be uncomfortable here. So let's try and see what I can learn. And some of my siblings, they've told me that I'm very bold in my decisions. So that's how I've operated. And that's what's made me still want to continue doing challenging things. I don't want to leave South Tucson because I know that it's still the hood. I know that it's still good to me. I know that we can still make something positive out of it. So I feel like I can still contribute with my presence there.
Tell us about the work you do in the community.
I am the executive director of the Indigenous Alliance Without Borders, also known as the Alianza Indígena Sin Fronteras. We are located at the Global Justice Center, which is formerly the Stardust Ballroom. So firstly, we do affirm the rights of Indigenous peoples along the U.S.-Mexico border, and we do advocate for Indigenous peoples globally. But our main focus is along the U.S.-Mexico border, particularly in Arizona with Tana'atam Nation and the Yaqui Nation. And we do help advocate for other Indigenous folks who migrate across the U.S.-Mexico border, particularly with Guatemala. So just for context, the Indigenous Alliance Without Borders, we have the Indigenous Languages Office, and we have a presence there at one of the migrant shelters here in Tucson, and that is headed by Sebastian Guinac. He is the director of the ILO, and he is the one who helps provide frontline services or frontline referrals to Indigenous migrants. So that's one project that we have. Another is our climate migration research, and that is headed by Blake Gentry. He is Cherokee, and he is a Cherokee that speaks Spanish so well. He is actually the original director for the Indigenous Languages Office. He is the one that started it. Another project that we've had is called the Plant Cruiser.
I heard about that.
That Plant Cruiser, it's a medicine-making project, and a lot of the knowledge that we use is like Mexican Indigenous knowledge, as well as Otom knowledge, Yaqui knowledge, and other knowledges that were kind of gifted to us, you know, the traditional medicine making. But that specific project is headed by Dr. Patricia Gonzalez. She's the former executive director of the Alianza, and she's also mentoring me in my position. But she is Comanche, Masewal, and Kickapoo, based out of Texas. And she's actually a retired professor from the University of Arizona. She recently retired.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I actually met her about 10 years ago through her Mexican-American studies class, also known as an an American Indian Studies class, it was curanderismo, which means healing or healing through plants. It's that kind of class. That's how I met her. And since then, you know, we've stayed connected. So she is the one behind the Plant Cruiser, along with Tracy Hughes Hamilton. Tracy also has descendancy with Yaqui, and she's also pretty involved in the Otham community as well. So that's another project that we have. We call it our Plant Cruiser project. It's all about medicine making, all about learning how to tend to the land, learning how to steward, but also advocating for the plants.
Amazing.
You know, advocating for the plants, you know, advocating for where are they being grown? How are they being grown? How are they being treated? All of that. Mm-hmm. So we have those discussions of stewardship pretty consistently. So another project that we have, which I helped start and which originally was the reason why I was hired, was the Indigenous Archives Without Borders project. And that specific project is allowing us to reclaim our narrative as an organization that represents Indigenous peoples along the U.S.-Mexico border. It helps us reclaim our narrative because, you know, you hear a lot of what current media expresses about what's happening along the U.S.-Mexico border. Whereas with us, like, there's a rich history. The media isn't presenting all narratives in an equitable manner because there's folks who are still thriving. There are folks who are still existing, who are still doing our ceremonies, who are still having to deal with border patrol. So this archive is meant to help uplift that narrative, whether it be positive, negative, but it is a narrative that belongs to us as Yaqui, as Otham, as people who have still existed here since time immemorial because the border is crossing us. With that in mind, the Indigenous Archives Without Borders project is meant to create that memory making. I don't want to call it a silo, but it's, you know, it's supposed to be meant to be accessed by community. And we are going to create like levels of access for tribal members and so forth. And also, we're getting like information donated to us from other community members. We also have to consult with tribes who were like, why do we have this? You know, does it even belong to us?
Yeah.
Should we even be handling this?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, these are discussions that we feel we're very responsible of. Whereas, you know, your basic museum is not going to repatriate, you know. So we're being very cognizant of the information that's being given to us. And then I like to use the term rematriation. So rematriation in our projects and how we operate is we're bringing balance because there is a lot of imbalance in the community, in the greater Tucson community, as far as how people are being taught in schools and the narratives that are being brought to them. And with that in mind, from this archival project, we are building a curriculum. We're not calling it a curriculum.
Yeah.
Because it's being put together by community. It's not being put together just by professors, you know, but it's being brought together by community and we're calling it a toolkit. So each unit in that toolkit explains different areas that we feel are important, especially like our youth and our high school age and our college age folks could benefit from. Because they sometimes they don't have their grandma or grandpa to tell them these stories about how they ended up over here or how they ended up having to live in a permanent home. There's all these intergenerational histories, traumas, and strengths that we don't hear about. So this toolkit is meant to help uplift those narratives. And it's also meant to tell those truths about Otham, about Yaqui people, but it's being done in a creative way where we want kids to be engaged. But unfortunately, you know, sometimes some of the information we are going to present is very heavy.
Yeah.
Because it is based off of human rights violations. So we are making sure that it is also trauma informed, but we also realize that maybe a student may be re-traumatized. And with that in mind, it's my responsibility to bring forward, you know, how are we going to balance that out for the kids who may be traumatized by the information that we're presenting to them? So I'm going to get other Indigenous folks who want to maybe record themselves to do like a breathing exercise. Because self-care can look like a lot of different things, especially for us Native people, you know? Because self-care isn't just, you know, getting your nails done or, you know, it's...
getting a facial.
Yeah. It's not just that. It's also, like, going out and, like, reconnecting to the land.
Yes.
You know?
Absolutely.
Or using an Indigenous affirmation. We're intentionally putting those little components of self-care into the curriculum so that we don't leave these youth, like, empty shells at the end. So... it's meant to uplift, it's meant to educate, it's meant to inform, but also elevate those people who want to do this curriculum. But this curriculum is moving at the pace of community. So we're definitely, you know, still in the throes of developing it.
I see.
And just for me, on a personal level, I have really been into advocating for curriculums or forms of education that are equitable, but also uplift, you know, the marginalized communities. We're very conscious of making a safe space for marginalized folks, especially Indigenous people, because we all come from those backgrounds. We know how it's like to be disempowered, and we know what it's like to feel othered or feel tokenized, right? Yes. So it's like those extremes, you know, we're either tokenized or if we're felt like othered. So that's the Alianza. I think I covered most of our projects because we're always trying to do something, and our hearts are very much in human rights and Indigenous rights of mobility.
Amazing. What inspires you to do this type of work?
I think a lot of healing is needed, especially like where we're at now in the world, because we are all aware of what colonialism causes. We're all aware of power dynamics with disenfranchised folks, marginalized folks. But at the same time, as Indigenous peoples, we're still here belonging to our land. Our land is still here. The plants that knew our ancestors are still here. There's like so much to cover for us. It's our responsibility. One other facet that really moves me is the healing that's needed for missing and murdered Indigenous peoples or missing and murdered Indigenous relatives. I prefer using the relatives part because that puts me in a position as an Indigenous woman to be responsible of my relatives. And that's one issue that keeps me going because I see how we could do better. And I see how the land can help us do better. I can see how connecting to our relatives in Mexico can help us do better. You know, it humbles us, but also reminds us of our own strengths as Indigenous peoples. And that also is reflected in the way I was raised, particularly by my dad, who made sure that I understood that we're all related in some way, shape, or form. And I later found out that a lot of other cultural leaders think that way too. We aren't here for ourselves, we're here for everyone else. And what humbled me and what really changed me a lot was having my own sons. I have a 12-year-old and a 2.5-year-old, and learning how they could walk this world in a different and healthier way as Yaqui men really makes me proud, because I know that I can at least help contribute to that. Because going back to missing and murdered Indigenous relatives, there's so much awareness behind it, so much willingness to wear red, to wear that red hand on your face. But also, what are you doing at home? You know, what are you doing at home to create healthier men? Because the problem is, it did start with women, and then it started with girls, and then it started with our Two-Spirit folks. And how are we going to empower the men so that they could truly step into their power as protectors? And what has happened along the way during these past centuries that have disempowered our men? So that's, you know, one of those things that I wake up in the morning and I'm like, okay, how am I going to make sure my boys are feeling connected emotionally? How am I connecting them to healthier coping mechanisms? Because those things weren't taught to me. So I'm making sure that that's something I'm teaching to them. And we normalize bringing families in so that we can all feel like we're in community. Because I'm sure you know, with lateral violence, especially Indigenous communities, that's a problem. But that's also a problem that stems from colonialism, because colonialism brought this narrative of individualism about me, 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 and it does not foster community. Whereas with the Alianza, we're trying to foster that community so that we could bring healthier generations, because the Alianza, we've existed for 26 years for a reason.
Exactly. And that's what I was thinking, too. It's like, wow, they've come a long way since 1994. Mm-hmm. I know you guys do a lot of different types of events that you all host or you support. What events do you have coming up?
I do want to first mention Indigenous Peoples Day. It's always the second Monday of October. And this year it is October 14th. This year is actually going to be our 10th annual.
Wow, cool.
So, yeah, we've hosted it in South Tucson, right along 26th Street in front of the Stardust Ballroom, also known as the Global Justice Center. So this year is going to be our 10th annual, and we are going to start organizing that pretty soon. And we do kind of want to make a big deal of the fact that it's our 10th annual. But also connected to that day, we also want to make sure that the city of Tucson, the city of South Tucson, Pima County, we want to make sure that all these governmental bodies are on board with it. Because federally, Christopher Columbus Day is celebrated, but not Indigenous Peoples Day. And these past few years, there are proclamations that come forward saying today is Indigenous People Day, but it's only for that year. It's not perpetual. So we still have to go back to these governmental bodies and tell them it's Indigenous People's Day. We have to keep going back. So hopefully this year we can turn it into a permanent holiday and not just, you know, 2024 is Indigenous People's Day, because federally, like I said, Christopher Columbus Day is celebrated perpetually. So that's one event that we have. And we do have Indigenous peoples on the mic that day. We do have cultural performances, and we also have a bunch of vendors. We have a bunch of Indigenous vendors that come through. So this year, it's going to be the same, but we're hoping to maybe make it a little bit bigger. Yeah. So for sure, like, we do need a little more help with organizing, a few more volunteers to help. We call it carry the water, help carry the water with us in organizing. And World Water Day. And we celebrate that day because it is recognized at the United Nations. So World Water Day is meant to honor, for us as Indigenous peoples, it's meant to honor the waters that have birthed us, the waters that we belong to, and the waters that Mother Earth carries for us to sustain us.
Amazing. So outside of the community work that you do, what do you enjoy doing most in your free time? You're like, what free time?
Exactly. So I really like being outside. That's my biggest thing is, even at work, we take our mandatory walks in the community because we need that vitamin D, you know, being in front of the computer.
I love that, mandatory walks.
Yes, that's what I used to do with my former coworkers. I used to work at Don Autumn Nation's executive office, and we used to take our mandatory walks because of me. So, yeah. but I guess just going out is my biggest thing. I don't really like staying in at home unless it has to do with my animals. Because I do have my chickens, I have my dogs, I have my cats.
Oh, wow.
And we're going to get a garden pretty soon, but I do have my plant babies as well. Mm-hmm. So that's what I normally do on my free time. I tend to them. I'm not tending to people in the community. I'm tending to my other little relatives at home. But yeah, I do like, yeah, definitely farmers markets. My boys and I, we like going to the Desert Museum pretty often because that's how I get to connect them to our mother language, to the Yaqui language, because I teach them what I know. And then if I'm not doing that, then I'm out traveling and I take off from Tucson just to go, you know, go to San Diego or somewhere else to enjoy myself, because that's my favorite thing to do is go enjoy the different bodies of water. That's what grounds me.
Yes. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for sharing. So as we wrap up the interview, do you have any last thoughts, comments, or even shout outs that you would like to share?
Any last thoughts for me is get involved. I know that some folks in the community, it's hard to get involved because of the lateral oppression or the lateral violence, you know, even in the workplace. But there are people out here who would love to be in community with you. You know, there is healing in being in community. It's just getting yourself out there, getting connected with these healthy folks, because we always hear that hurt people, but the opposite of that is healed people heal people. So you can grow in that way as an individual. And that's what's helped me grow, in the sense that I'm lucky that I get to be in community with a lot of these folks, where we acknowledge our privileges, or we acknowledge our different, where we're coming from life, and we meet each other where we're at. That's one thing I always remind younger folks, younger Yaqui folks, is if you had a bad day, like with a community member, or if you had a bad day with an elder, try to meet them where they're at, because they may have come off to you in a very negative way where it did hurt you. It felt like you were harmed. But just try to meet them where they're at, but also learn your boundaries, as a lot of us don't have that skill set to cope. So remind yourself how to cope in a healthy way, because that can take you far as a person. Those are my two cents, especially for any of the younger folks who may be listening, because we need a lot of healing, but community can help in that way.
Any shout outs?
I would like to shout out maybe my son, James. So there's James, and then there's Ta'a. My youngest son is Ta'a. That means sol or sun in Yaqui. So to those two, I know that they're going to hear this one day so that they can remember.
Yes.
You know, they can remember, and they can remind me, you know, because once we get older, sometimes we start forgetting. So that this, I guess this is for them so that they can remember.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Lourdes, for sharing your story and for being here with us at KXEI.
Yes. Thank you. Chocotesia.
You are listening to Cultivating Indigenous Voices, featuring Lourdes Escalante, hosted and produced by Tina Andrew. To hear other episodes, go to kxei.org.